The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Gentlemen, it's a holiday weekend. I hope you enjoyed your turkey and the trimmings and the family and the friends. But it's time to get back to business. You are joining We the People Radio with your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin, our musical savant and show producer. And we're going to be talking about some pretty interesting stuff today, as we always do. This show is pre-recorded, so please don't call in, but feel free to go to wethepeopleradio.us to follow along with the information about our guests today. And you can also join the chat room. The chat room should be alive and well and really fun.
Because we're planning on being on the chat room.
Yeah.
Because we haven't had our turkey yet, because it's still...
So we
November 3rd, so we too
will be on the chat room with you, sitting at home in our jammies with our coffee and not in the studio as we normally are. So actually, this is early November.
In all likelihood, I will be in the studio running this thing.
That is true, Bob.
Bob, you'll be on the chat room for sure then, just in case the rest of us oversleep.
But I'll have a turkey sandwich with me.
You know, I always like to kind of bring things up that have happened during the week and things I've read and, you know, all the fun surprises out there for everybody. A little premature because we're a couple of weeks out, or maybe 3 weeks out, actually, before this show. But I got to tell you, this whole... And I don't know what it's going to be like 3 weeks from now, but this whole Obamacare thing, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. And would this be a good time to say I told you so?
Did you guys read the thing from Jackie Mason, the comedian?
Oh, what did
he
say?
What did
he say?
Hold on, let's look it up.
Pull that up.
It was super funny, though. I just emailed
it
to my brother. He's in Afghanistan.
I
thought he could use a...
And I'm not laughing at anybody, because I'm one of the ones who buys my insurance as a private individual, so... I'm pretty much screwed, but I saw it coming. I knew it was coming, so, you know, I've come to terms with that. But so many people out there, you know, because the guy can, you know, the fact that he's articulate was all they needed, and so...
Well, something just occurred to me. This is actually airing on December 1st, so supposedly the Obamacare website is up and running by now.
So we're missing great opportunity to cap on them if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
How do we cover our bets either way?
How do we cover our bets?
Come on, it's not going to be working.
It won't be.
It won't be working.
Go to Obamacare.gov.
Healthcare.gov.
Yes, tell us in the chat room what you find.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
try
but
to get on.
We'll all know. So if we sound like knuckleheads, that's
because
we're a long way out.
If you go on there and you go into the system, you can't back out and you can't delete your information. So a lot of folks are, hopefully the smart ones are not.
You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave.
There you go.
Yeah, but the other thing, too, is that no real security. So even just to go find out what you're up against.
Yeah. Well, there was an email floating around from, you know, a friend of ours that quoted someone who had actually gone into the exchange, had an existing condition, which was type 1 diabetes. And when she went into the website and found out that her premiums and her deductibles were going to be outrageous based on prior, you know, what compared to what she'd had before, she decided that she was going to opt out and not purchase the insurance. She got an email later that day.
Yeah, but that's not true.
It's not true. Okay.
Nope. I know exactly what you're reading. It looks like a clip out of a newspaper, and it had a woman's name, it had a man's name, it had all different people, and it had the exact same story.
Okay.
They said they were recontacted by the website and told that they had to pay a huge fine.
$1,000.
Yeah, it was like a huge fine.
It was 1% of her income.
Yeah, and it turned out it was fake.
Yeah. You know, you got to wonder.
Here we go. Legendary comedian Jackie Mason has uncorked a full-blown assault on President Obama in his troubled attempt to provide health care for Americans. So if you look up Jackie Mason and you look up Obamacare, you'll get it regardless. It was yesterday, I think, the 3rd of November.
Oh, it says he's a lying maniac.
Yeah.
It was Originally on Breitbart, I think.
Probably. There's an audio on here, actually, and it says, never did I expect a guy like this, the head of a country, to blatantly lie to your face, and then not only to lie to your face, then lie about the fact that he never lied, then lie again about the next lie he told. There used to be a time when you would worship the president, even if you didn't like him. You knew he told the truth because he was the president of a country. Now he's the only guy in America who would have the nerve to lie this much. You say to yourself, wait a second, who am I listening to? Was this guy actually elected to the presidency? The man who's completely out of his mind, who's out of touch with humanity, with America, who doesn't seem to know what's going on here? Doesn't he read the paper? He goes, this guy should be locked up. If he wasn't the president, he'd be in jail or in a sanitarium. He wouldn't be outside talking to people in this condition. He'd be considered a danger to his own health, to his own life.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's always hilarious. Nice when the ship sails.
Yeah,
so anyway,
it is.
If you need some, vintage Jackie Mason.
Well, it's
the title of the article. It was on WorldNet Daily, and it said, "Famous comic flays Obama as a lying maniac."
Well, he revived his career back in the 90s with his legendary rants about Clinton.
Oh, this is perfect for him.
I didn't
know
I liked Jackie Mason, but I guess I do.
So, anyway, the saga continues, and hopefully 3 weeks from now, this will have corrected itself, but don't hold your breath.
Here is my favorite line from his rant. It says, he looks at you straight in the face and tells you that if you want your plan, you got your plan. You keep your plan. Now, a month and a half later, you got no plan. You lost your plan, and he tells you you still got a plan.
That's right. I wrote that. I remember that part.
I mean, really? I mean, okay, but psychologically, what is he doing?
He's a lying maniac. Come on, can't you read?
I mean, is
right here on the internet.
Wow.
I know, it's
unbelievable.
Unbelievable. All right.
With that, I'll cede my microphone to one of our guests here.
Great.
Nice. Do we have to take a break? Or now we have no idea what time it is because we're like... You'll have to tell us. You'll have to actually tell us today when it's time for breaks.
Exactly.
So we're going to be chatting about the National Defense Authorization Act. And that's funny because we probably all saw it today on the Drudge Report.
I didn't.
Somebody created a new logo for the NSA that said, they peep while you sleep and they're the only agency that's truly listening. Kind of fun. We're going to be talking with Debbie Bacigalupi and Mr. Dan Johnson.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Very excited.
And they're actually here.
We are.
So much better
studio.
When people are really here.
We race from Siskiyou County down here.
Nice.
Yeah, to be with you.
Nice. Well, you know, we like to do a little comedy act of our own to kind of get everybody warmed up in the beginning. So.
Yeah, but when you've got Jackie Mason, you can just defer to him.
Yeah.
It would have been good to play the audio of that, but it's it's too muffled.
Okay.
It's not real clear and unfortunate because, you know, his delivery is legendary. No laughing matter. You know, you guys, the NDAA obviously is no laughing matter. The problems up in Siskiyou County, also legendary.
Well, and I just wanted to point out that Dan Johnson has been on We the People Radio before, and I believe that was in August. So go back into the archives on wethepeopleradio.us, scroll down to August, and you can find a two-hour show with Dan. And I actually first discovered Dan by way of Debbie Bacigalupi. Isn't that wonderful? State of Jefferson. And
Look what shirt I'm wearing.
Ooh,
well, the audience can't see.
State of Jefferson. Don't tread on me. I love it.
I got it on.
She's got her nice double-leg State of Jefferson. I was just showing him. There's a nice cartoon on the front page of the Tea Party site.
I love it. It's a giant, it looks like a giant cruise ship that says
Titanic.
California. And it's sunk down into the ocean about halfway. And the little lifeboat floating away says State of Jefferson. And all the little people on it, are they waving bye-bye to the State of California?
Yeah, because it's Titanic.
And... Great, somewhat of a great segment on CBS from Sunday morning. The CBS News on Sunday morning did a clip on the State of Jefferson. The only problem with it was that, of course, they have to get both sides, so they talked to some of our esteemed academics.
Yeah, who know nothing about it and don't live
and,
here.
And do the visual of my finger down my throat. And then and some of our politicians, and of course, they poo-pooed the entire movement.
But didn't talk to anybody who was in elected office here.
No, they did not.
Kind of about Colorado, actually.
It ended
kind
up
of the thrust of it.
Yeah, they touched on California, but kind of
Yeah. And they must have done this a long time ago because they spoke with Jerry Byrne up there in Modoc County.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
But I know fantastic. That one of the Fox affiliates in Sacramento was just up at Mark Baird's place. And
the Blaze TV.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yeah.
That hasn't aired yet.
No,
okay.
There are several things that haven't aired yet.
No, so. The One Day Area Plan, the regionalism, did air already with Rosa Corey and, you know, friends of ours and Chris Pareja and others in the Bay Area to expose, you know, what's happening in the Bay Area in regionalism, which I tell you people up here in Shasta and Siskiyou and Modoc counties, we're getting ready for you to move down.
Got a rabbit hutch all picked up for us.
Yeah, we are.
Well, and I saw something on the news today that was promoting, it might have been the LA Times, San Francisco Chronicle, I don't recall which, where they were promoting the popularity of individual living spaces that were 270 square feet.
Yeah. As low as 250.
Yeah.
When we
yeah.
were at the Rio or Summit.
And you know, the way they.
What's this room right here?
How many square feet?
What do you think?
The studio that we're in.
Who's the estimator?
50? 100?
I don't
Small.
Know. Yeah.
500 square feet?
We're all touching each other.
Could you imagine?
Well, and they said it. And they,
oh, that's a bad visual right after Thanksgiving.
Not
man.
That close.
Dan's like, I'm 20. Get me out of here.
There's another guy in here to take his side. But they were promoting somebody that was a construction company involved in building the stack and pack housing. And they said, well, you know, you do give up your personal privacy, but down below in the streets, you have life and it's active.
Yeah.
Oh,
I saw that.
And that outweighs the fact that you've given up all of your privacy.
Livable, safe cities. Are you kidding
yeah.
me? But you know what? As more of that happens, we're going to need people like Dan exposing, you know, things like the National Defense Authorization Act. Because a lot of us are going to get really upset.
Mm-hmm.
And I know right now, because I go around speaking about Agenda 21 everywhere, I'm considered under the NDAA 2012 a terrorist on my own in my own country on my own homeland.
Right.
So
you used the word homeland.
Uh-oh. Is that bad, Dan?
It's still Heil Hitler.
Dan, how much trouble are we all in?
We're in to say the least, a lot of trouble. I mean, this is probably the most dangerous law in terms of provisions of the Constitution that it violates, probably the most dangerous law in existence in America, actually the most dangerous law in our history. I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the Japanese-American detention. 120,000 Japanese-Americans were detained during World War II. Well, all it was, you look funny, you look Japanese, we're going to pick you up off the street. And problem with that was it was essentially racial injustice. We're absolutely racist, picking up every person who looks Japanese, putting them in a concentration camp. What they've done with this now is they've used the term terrorist, which we've, unfortunately in America, taken to mean you're not innocent until proven guilty. You don't have rights if you're a terrorist. We just assume you don't. And we assume you're guilty before proven innocent. And they've taken it, and now they have this power so they can call someone a terrorist. And then people in America immediately reel back and run away from these people and just ignore everything they're saying and consider them the enemy. And now,
is it kind of like being called a conspiracy theorist?
It's kind of like being called a conspiracy theorist. Kind of like being called a
depends on who's doing the defining.
It depends exactly. Yeah. Depends who's doing the defining. Depends on who's telling you what you are. I mean, all of these different terms you can use throughout history, but terrorism is one in particular that scares people. I mean, you literally have the word terror in this in this word, in this descriptor. So when the United States government figured out they could call people terrorists and we automatically assume they don't have rights, well, now they can call people who criticize them terrorists. And, for example, or even people who don't even know they're criticizing the government or not even active in doing so.
Hold that thought.
Yeah.
We're going to come right back because we're on a timed, march here. We got to stick to our times. Now that we're all here, we can actually see each other, unlike usual, where we're going, hello, hello. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio here at 1460 KCNR. Right after Thanksgiving.
Gobble, gobble.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over. But
I knew you were going to say something. I was like, what's she going to say?
Somebody had to do it.
Body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Don't make no mistake. So please stop explaining.
You're joining We the People Radio. We are pre-recorded. Do not call in, but jump on the website at wethepeopleradio.us and join us in the chat room. So we are talking with Dan Johnson. Dan is the founder of PANDA, which is People Against the National Defense Authorization Act. And for all of those out there that are listening in that think that young people either are unaware, don't care, or unconcerned, nothing could be further from the truth. And what we have learned, especially through Dan, is that different generations communicate differently. It isn't that they're not there, but they have different ways of communicating their concerns and fighting the battle. And they understand that the battle involves their future. So Dan is 20 years old, homeschooled, an Eagle Scout, an incredible constitutional scholar, and has become
all
one
good guy,
and has become one of the most sought after impromptu speakers in the country. And then we're with Debbie Bacigalupi, and Debbie has run for office in the Bay Area, is a terrific activist for liberty and freedom for all of us, very involved in the State of Jefferson movement.
And comes she was from, you when you were absent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Comes from rural California and lives in the Bay Area and is an activist and a speaker against Agenda 21.
And I saw Dan back in July in Klamath Falls, Oregon, with my mom and dad, and we were blown away by his presentation.
That's how you guys got connected.
Yeah.
I wondered about that.
Yep. Yeah, and Bert Holzhauser, who's been huge on the wolf issue for us in Siskiyou County, and he's the one who said, you need to come see this guy. We don't know what it is, but... And I was playing on my iPad, and my dad kept elbowing me, saying, pay attention, pay attention. I'm like, I'm playing a game, and he's getting mad at me, and all of a sudden Dan goes up and starts speaking, and my iPad went away. Mm-hmm. And for the next hour, I was engaged with Dan. He knows about Common Core. He knows about Agenda 21.
Mm-hmm.
He knows about the Constitution and wars. And I'm impressed, because when you ask Dan, what got you involved in this, Dan?
Well, I avoided politics for a while, as I said before, poly being many and ticks being blood-sucking creatures. So avoiding politics as much as possible was the mantra for me. And I realized toward I was about 16, 17, that eventually I'm going to have to get involved in it if I want to change anything. It determines where we can go, what we can do, how much things cost, etc. And so I knew I had to eventually get involved, but I wanted to push that off until after college. And that didn't happen. Because I came across a YouTube video around Thanksgiving 2011, and it laid out the National Defense Authorization Act 2012. And I got to hear Senator Lindsey Graham on the floor saying, shut up, you don't get a lawyer, you're an enemy combatant. And the world is the battlefield, including the homeland, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not. And I'm hearing all these things, and I grew up homeschooled, I grew up studying Nazi Germany, took out a lot of books in the library, Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, things like that. And when I saw what was happening in America, that I was originally led to believe was the 1933 Enabling Act, what I later found was it was actually the 1933 Reichstag Fire Decree. So if you take the Decree for the Protection of People in the State of the Third Reich, which was passed in 1933 before they went to war in Germany, and you take the original Weimar Constitution, you take the parts of that Constitution that it violates, and then you take the NDAA of 2012 and the Patriot Act, and you take the U.S. Constitution, you take the parts of that that they violate, identical.
Yeah.
Absolutely identical. And when you see something like that, when you see that this is exactly what happened in the country that I've studied for this long, you can't not stand up. I mean, our description on our very first website that we had up was... We do not want armed military soldiers with AR-15s outside our children's homes, guarding them and telling them what they can do. Because the line between the police and military is a very thick one for a reason. The police are protect and serve. The police are protect the rights of the people. They were originally called peace officers because their job was not to enforce the laws, but to protect the peace. Now, enforcing the laws was... important part of that, but if there was a law that didn't make sense to be applied in that certain area, they had discretion not to use it. Now they're called law enforcement. They're originally called peace officers. The military's been different. The military's job is to eliminate threats, is shoot to kill, essentially. And when you give the military policing powers on American soil, then there's a reason we had the Posse Comitatus Act, because you, as you remember back in the Civil War, we had the Northern military during the Reconstruction era, kind of forcing people to vote certain ways and things like that, since they were given jurisdiction. So we put in the Posse Comitatus Act, said you cannot use the military as a Posse Comitatus or a force of the county to use law enforcement powers on our soil. And that didn't last very long, because in 1942, we had the Executive Order 9066, which said, okay, we're going to give the military jurisdiction over certain areas of the coastline in the United States. It said nothing about detention. It said the military shall be given jurisdiction over certain areas of the country. We detained 120,000 Japanese Americans, and the Supreme Court approved it by the military. Also, during World War II, there were some German-American citizens who turned themselves in. They had been sent over by the Nazi regime to sabotage our factories here in America. They landed in Massachusetts. And they turned themselves in, said, we don't want to do this. We only hooked a ride to America because we wanted to get back home. And FDR originally wanted them paraded around the country in cages to show the American people we caught some Nazis. And
that's always friendly.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. But what ended up happening was they were brought into a military commission, military court, and they were given a general to defend them. And the general would make motions, things like that, well, I want this dismissed or this evidence dismissed or what have you. And the military court would, he described it this way. They would walk away for enough time to have a cigar. They would come back and deny the motion. This went all the way up to the Supreme Court. Eventually, they appealed. The Supreme Court said, go for it. They didn't write an opinion as to why, but they said, go for it. So we executed a German-American citizen and several of his German friends. And then when the Supreme Court came back from session, they're like, okay, we need to write an opinion now that this is already done. They went, oh, crap. This is the wrong thing. In fact, Justice Black said, I felt like a butcher in a meat market. And so this is what happens when you allow the military to have jurisdiction over our soil. Boston, let's go closer.
Yeah.
Watertown, okay? You saw the police response in Watertown. According to The Atlantic, that was not led by the police. That was led by the military, which means the military has jurisdiction.
It explains the outfits.
Which explains the outfits, which explains everything they used. And 3,000 law enforcement officers helped. But the military ran the show. What happened? You had people being led out of their house at gunpoint. You had reporters being thrown on the ground and searched. You had people being picked up in the middle of the city and dropped off in a different city and just left there and brought back. And they still didn't find the teenager they were going for. And so this is what happens when you allow the military to operate and to enforce the laws on American soil. And that's what the 2012 NDAA does. It gives an option. Now, it's not necessary. They don't have to. But it gives the U.S. military the option to detain you under the law of war and then send you off to a foreign country, send you off to a foreign entity, send you off to another court, put you in military trial, or detain you without trial indefinitely. And they have the option to do it whoever they want, whenever they want. We had this two-track court system in Nazi Germany. If you were picked up off the street in Nazi Germany, you could either be given your constitutional rights if they liked you. So let's say you're a sergeant, you bring someone in for speeding, and you bring commander sees, and like, dude, that's my buddy. Like, him and I were having coffee last night. That person gets let off easy. They get constitutional rights. They go into a regular court of law. No problem. But you bring somebody, like a pastor, bring somebody in, and the guy's like, all right, but give him a military trial. Military trial usually ended in execution or a concentration camp. This is what we have here in America, where if you're commit a belligerent act or do something remotely kind of sort of maybe related to Al-Qaeda, then you can be detained by the military. But it's optional. So when we were funding Al-Qaeda or Al-Nusra in Syria, then the president doesn't get detained. Congress doesn't get detained because it's optional. They don't have to.
Wow.
So recently I've been reading articles about Obama is letting commanders go. What do you say about that? Are these? Do you think these are commanders who don't want to follow this new, I don't know, military?
See, it's interesting. I guess I'll weigh in on that one because that's a real, I don't know. You'd have to look at that item by item. because through work and stuff, I've been dealing a lot with VA. And a lot of these things that have happened in the military that have been covered up for a lot of years, they roll right to some of these generals. So as they start kind of cleaning up some of this, I mean, some of it's just like, you know, okay, I'll use the term hazing, although that sort of underplays, but hazings that have gone totally wrong and should never have been allowed to happen. And now they're having to shake out some of those people that allowed those things for a number of years. But on the flip side, you have what's lurking in the background with this control of the military and wanting to use them for domestic purposes and all that. I don't know.
It's scary because I hear all the time on various shows, mostly conservative, you know, minded, sure, freedom loving shows, that our military would back us up. The majority of our military, our men in uniform, would back the average citizen up and not detain them. And I
would say I would only place it around 75%, because you look at New Orleans. Look at New Orleans after Katrina. Whether you agree with it or disagree with it, the police chief in New Orleans said, we're going to take all the guns, we're going to take all the weapons. And who was sent to enforce it? National Guard troops. And did they? Absolutely. You have an interview with a young man on the street saying, you know, asking, would you shoot an American? He's hesitant, but he said, yeah, I would. So you have, I think it's going to be the veterans, mm-hmm, and the older generation in the military who probably will stand behind us. Because I spent, not long enough to even count, but I spent a semester in Army ROTC. And so I'm familiar with the type of psychological training you go through. And they don't talk about unlawful orders. They don't. It's just, it's not there. And so these young guys going in, I think that they might enforce something like that. And while I can't necessarily comment on why were these generals in particular let go, we do know history repeats itself. And I'm sure everyone here is familiar with Stalin's Red Purge. What he did when officers in the military did not want to listen to him. He purged thousands of military officers and had them either executed or hauled off to detention. So that is, I mean, it's a definite possibility here, and that's why it's up for the cities, it's up for the towns, it's up for the counties to say, no, we're not going to allow this here. It's up for the sheriffs to say, no, we're not going to allow this here, because otherwise you're going to have a Supreme Court that either A, approves it, or even if they disapprove it. I mean, the Supreme Court has neither the power of the sword nor the purse. They can't enforce their ruling. Right. And so, I mean, Andrew, yeah, Jackson absolutely 100% ignored the Supreme Court's rule not to mess with the Indian tribes. And he did anyway. And so I think it's going to be up to local jurisdictions for the first time since the Fugitive Slave Acts. When you're facing up against a possibility of military indefinite detention, you're going to have some problems that are going to have to be dealt with locally.
Yeah. Anytime we start talking about, you know, let's suspend the Constitution so everybody can be safe. Patriot Act, come, mm-hmm, to mind, anybody?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, let's put a camera on every corner. You know, let's surveil everything. And for all those people that thought we were crazy to think that was going on for all the, yeah, that time, I mean, now we make jokes about the NSA, but yeah, in real life, anybody who thinks that everything they say isn't being, mm-hmm, listened to, whether it's being recorded or not, is another matter. I mean,
yeah. Well, and now they can't deny, people cannot deny the black boxes in cars. We were in the Bay Area trying to forewarn everybody as the, yeah, One Bay Area plan was being passed, and in there they supposedly passed black boxes. Well, now it's a national thing that, mm-hmm, they want to do black boxes, mm-hmm, to track our, yeah, every move,
right,
and then tax us on it.
Yeah, vehicle, right, miles traveled,
but still,
tax.
Your awesome. Personal security, your personal privacy is now up for grabs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the Easy Pass in New York. Guy went around, took his Easy Pass and hooked up to a light and went around, and it lit up in a lot of places. The Easy Pass shouldn't be lighting up.
Oh, to show where
it was being scanned and where he was being tracked with.
See,
it.
I have a fast pass for the Bay Bridge and whatnot, and I keep mine in a Mylar bag.
Yeah.
I only take it out when I go through, but you know, it's interesting. I had my front windows done with it's a film called Blue Ice, and so it's not a tint, it's not a darkness, but it's a UV blocker, and you know what? Now my fast pass won't work.
It's the solar. I just got one too. It's a solar.
Yeah, well, it cuts you off from all that stuff, so go if your window's tinted. It's well worth it. All right, we'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be back with Dan Johnson, Debbie Bacigalupi here at KCNR 1460 AM. I'm
I'm afraid to wash my hair, 'cause I might open my eyes and find someone standing there. People say I'm crazy, just a little touch, but maybe she always remind me of a psycho too much. That's why I always feel like somebody's watching me, and I have to cry. Oh, I always feel like somebody's watching me, who's playing tricks on me.
That's our little love song for the NSA. You are joining We the People Radio. Go to wethepeopleradio.us and find out everything about today's guests. That'll save us all some time so that they can spend the on-air time just telling us what we need to know. So we're going to get back with Debbie Bacigalupi and Dan Johnson. And Dan, where do you want to take it from here? We talked about the California version of the NDAA and also something about some camps that people are parked in when there's an emergency.
Yeah, because we were talking about Boston and stuff like that and how people got removed out of Boston and relocated. Go back to that if you've researched that, because I haven't.
Right, so what happened in Boston, so it's important to distinguish Boston from Watertown here. So what happened in Boston is what they did is they did a shelter-in-place order. Now, at first it was an order. Later it became optional, but first it was an order.
Shelter-in-place?
Shelter-in-place.
Okay.
That means don't leave your house.
Mm-hmm.
So an entire city went from bustling to nothing.
Right.
Now remember, this is a teenager. This is a teenager who they later found out was unarmed. This is the whole reason they did this. For one teenager, they later found out was unarmed. And then they went into, they figured he was hiding in a 6 or 7 block area of Watertown, Massachusetts. And I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the Boston Marathon bombing, where this is all coming from. And they decide to lock down the area. So they have military vehicles all around the area. They have Humvees racing through. They decide to lock down the area. What they decide to do is watch what they did in Big Bear Lake, California. Remember Christopher Dorner, that incident where he supposedly wrote a manifesto online, which sounds like a Hollywood movie, which is ridiculous. Why would but not getting into that. it doesn't make any sense.
Rabbit trail.
Regardless of what they did, was they used as an excuse to lock down a little resort community out here called Big Bear Lake, California, and they went house to house and door to door in Big Bear Lake, California, and searched their homes, regardless of whether there was someone there or not. They searched the house. They broke into homes, exactly. Uh-huh. And so this is what happened in Watertown, Massachusetts, is they went door to door and house to house.
And who's the they?
We're talking about the military supported by law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking Boston PD, we're talking Watertown PD, we're talking several other police departments in the area, we're talking state police, Massachusetts State Police, we're talking Department of Homeland Security, we're talking National Guard units, mm-hmm. we're talking a lot of agencies coming together
teams.
On this. SWAT teams, exactly. And so they went house to house and door to door in this community of Watertown, Massachusetts. And not only did they not find the guy until they lifted martial law and a citizen came out and lit his cigarette and went, "There's blood on my boat. Where'd that come from?" And called up the police, and eventually they got there.
So while they were doing the job, they didn't do it very well.
Yeah, not only did they not do it very well, but you have video of them pointing their rifles at people and bringing them out. And you have I was listening to the local news station out there as I was watching this unfold when they found him in the boat. So it was a little lull after the police fired over 300 shots at this teenager in a boat. There's a little bit of a lull, and the reporter is asking his affiliate, "Okay, well, you live in Watertown. I heard they came to your house. How did that go?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, they came in my house. They pointed guns at my children. They pointed guns at me, and they walked through my house and searched it and found there was no one there, and I had my kids wave goodbye to them as they left." And I thought, what?
Yeah.
Wait, your kids are going to be scarred emotionally for life because they've had semi-automatic weapons pointed at them by guys in masks and full body armor, and you're having, shake their hand. You're having your kids shake their hands.
When the police kick your door in.
When the police kick your door in.
God, that's awesome.
Be sure to say thank you when they're leaving, right?
Yeah, be sure to say, "Hey, thanks for scarring me for life. It'll cost me a couple $20,000-$30,000 psychological expenses for that." It's amazing because
that's like compliance training.
Compliance training. It's like the TSA, the airport, the body scanners at TSA airports. You notice how when you walk into an airport and you go through some airports have body scanners, some are just metal detectors, but the big ones like Detroit, Boston, Orlando, etc., they all have body scanners, and so you're either you can either get sexually assaulted or you can get radio scanned.
Mm-hmm.
And when you walk into the body scanners, note the position they put you in.
Uh-huh.
I'm putting my hands up. It's a surrender position. They're teaching you and they're training you to surrender to your government. And people, most people don't think anything of it. They'll walk in and they'll scan them.
We had an Israeli security guy whose name eludes me, but anyway, he was on and he was telling us that the reason they're doing that is to build facial recognition database, right? Because they've already got your passport or your driver's license. What a great way to get current photographs of your face. So I do it every single time looking at the floor. And they're all, lift your head. I lift it up. They get the end of my nose.
Yeah.
If they can catch me from the air, I guess they could see me.
Well, and recently there was an issue. There was a situation in Roseville, California.
Yeah.
And there's a beautiful picture that went viral on Facebook of, it looked like California Highway Patrol pointing a rifle, I mean, this far from the face of a motorist. Driving through the neighborhood, going home. They were looking for somebody that they thought was in the neighborhood. This guy's minding his own business, driving home, and he's got somebody, 6 inches from his face with a rifle.
It's becoming more and more prevalent that we're experiencing all this stuff, just as much as they're blaming everything on global warming.
Yeah.
Now we have this other issue that no matter what tragedy comes up, there's always, it's always somebody died, it's with a gun, and...
Mm-hmm. Well, look at two recent incidents. You have Concord, New Hampshire, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but the government of Concord, New Hampshire, the police department, submitted a grant application to the Department of Homeland Security. They wanted a Bearcat. Now, a Bearcat is a mini bear. It's essentially, it's a tank without the main gun.
Mm.
So it's a tank without tracks, without the main gun. It looks like an M1 Bradley for any of your listeners who have
We're used to Bobcats in ag country.
Yeah. It's about three
different kind of,
it's not good.
That's a different kind of cat.
It's about three times the size of a Bobcat, armor plating, the whole gun ports, the whole nine yards. And they're trying to get this. They submit this application, and they specifically list the Free State Project and Occupy New Hampshire as domestic terrorist groups that are the reason they're getting this Bearcat. Now, the Free State Project is essentially a group of people who want to move to New Hampshire to make it a free place. I'm part of it. I have signed the thing saying I'm going to move to New Hampshire. It's a group of liberty lovers in that area. And they've been not liked before. One of their state reps said, well, we can't make it unlawful for them to live here because that's kind of illegal, but we'll just make it the least free state in the country so they'll leave. So this is the response they're getting in their state. But the Concord, New Hampshire, they got a Bearcat, or they went to go purchase a Bearcat. Big uprising, big fight, and you had an ex-Marine, a Marine colonel, saying, when I was in Baghdad, I was outfitted with a lot of equipment like this Bearcat and like uniforms that they were wearing in Boston. And he said he got an email from his buddy, who's in the SWAT team in Boston PD. And the email showed him in body armor. And he said, that was the exact same gear I was wearing in Baghdad. Mm-hmm. Now, we call this staging. So they're setting up what he calls a domestic army on American soil through the Department of Homeland Security and through this federalizing of local police departments, setting up a domestic army here on U.S. soil, and you have a perfect example of what that looked like in LAX a couple days ago.
Yep.
Okay, so you had the shooter in LAX, shot one TSA agent, and I'm not condoning the violence, but shot one TSA agent and wounded a couple others. And however, there are pileups, there are car accidents that kill more people than that shooter did.
Yeah.
They locked down the airport. They locked down the highways outside the airport. They brought in all their toys. They had hundreds of police officers on scene. They had police snipers. They had Bearcats. They had helicopters. They had one shooter, one terminal. And what are they going to shut down the entire United States next time we have an active shooter?
That is teaching the general public that this is what to expect.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the response is, so when somebody gets shot in, like, Sandy Hook, the response is, oh, take away the people's guns. When a TSA agent gets shot, the response is, oh, give the TSA agents guns.
Yeah. What? Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, they if they had more guns, they would be better off. It's like,
well, duh. Doesn't that apply to everyone else?
Of course, they blame the whole incident on someone who's a quote unquote conspiracy theorist.
Of course. Okay, yeah, of course. Hold that thought. We're going to come back with that one. We've got a quick break. Thank our advertisers. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I'm sure we're having fun in the chat room, but this is pre-recorded.
Yeah, we don't,
so
know,
I don't know,
but
how much fun
but
we're
counting on it.
We're planning on having fun, though. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM.
Can you hear me? Fight, I can lose. The accused is an innocent man.
And we're back. We're talking to Debbie Bacigalupi and Dan Johnson. If you want to find out more about our guests today, go to wethepeopleradio.us. Take the time to follow the links, the videos. It's all there. Okay.
Okay.
Where do we go now?
Okay, so we were talking about how we just had these breaks in the middle, and then we have to try to, like, thread it back together.
Yeah, because we cover so much
now
on the break.
Box when we're not, you know. Okay, so we were talking about how the police are getting all these military vehicles and different things like that.
Gear.
You were saying that when they get the vehicles, go back to that part.
So, yeah. So, not only are they getting massive tanks, but each tank ordered from DHS comes with a free batch of military tactics training, along with a military tactician. So, essentially, you're getting someone from the military or from Department of Homeland Security, what have you, to train the police to no longer protect and serve, but now to eliminate threats. And so they're getting military tactics training to go along with all of their wonderful armored vehicles that they're buying. And you see the effects of this training all the time. In SWAT raids, the number of people who've been killed in SWAT raids in the past 10 years has gone up astronomically.
Mm.
And there was a raid in Maryland where a SWAT team bursts through the door and they shoot the dog and they fire shots into the wall around this guy's mother-in-law, and he pulls the mother-in-law in and they're cowering in the corner as SWAT team searches their house, and it was the mayor.
Mm.
That was the mayor of that city.
Wow.
That they raided his house. Now, they got fired.
Yeah.
But, you know, when they're even doing that, you have this fierce militarization of police. Mm-hmm. Look at Paragould, Arkansas. This was fun. This was
absolutely
fun.
Wait, Dan, real quickly.
Yeah.
And hold that thought.
Mm-hmm.
So what I hear you saying is that there's kind of a merging
going
on.
You sound like a psychiatrist. Yeah, what I hear you saying, Dan.
So what I hear you saying, Dan, is there is a merging going on. This is, maybe I'm wrong, but our military police are being, it sounds like, coerced to do what our peace officers used to do. And then our peace, but they still probably have their same military power that they did, but now they're it's extended, and our peace officers, our police officers, are now given military expansion, so to speak. So are we seeing a growing of our police force or our military force together as a larger force against human
citizens?
People?
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what we're seeing. I mean, you look at, as I was saying, with Paragould, Arkansas. Now this was we were rolling on the floor laughing between our team when we looked at this article. But so Paragould, Arkansas, which ironically is the friendly city. Paragould means the friendly city.
Mm, really?
So Paragould, Arkansas, the police chief decides that because of high crime in his neighborhood, he's going to arm all of his officers with SWAT weapons, and they're going to walk around with, as he quoted, AR-15s around their neck, close quote, as they're walking around the streets, and anybody who's on the street is going to get stopped and ID'd. anywhere they walk.
Wow.
And he's saying, well, you know, you need probable cause to do this type of stuff. Well, I have probable cause. High crime rates are my probable cause. And when
it's like stop and frisk on steroids.
It's like stop and frisk on steroids, exactly.
You're guilty until proven innocent.
And he said, quote, I don't care if they're walking their dog or not. We're going to make sure they're walking their dog. End quote. And you look at the type of stuff he's saying about Paragold, we called him on it. So we wrote an open letter to them, and we called them on it. And so what did they do? They canceled all the public meetings where they were going to talk about this, quote, for officer safety, end quote.
and that's the tactic that they use.
And the program is still in place today. So essentially, there's martial law in Paragold, Arkansas. To my knowledge, they haven't even retracted.
And let me, just from a psychological standpoint, you've got local police, you've got military, you've got state police, and, you know, I'm
sheriffs, department of fish and game.
And I would think the vast, the vast majority are male, and the vast majority are younger. So how does that, you know, the whole testosterone, ooh, look at these toys that I have, how much does that whole desire to be G.I. Joe fit into the psychological manipulation of getting all of these individuals to do what they're being told?
You see, throughout history, all the regimes have turned their law enforcement against the people. That has been something they've always done, is try to create a divide between the law enforcement and the people. And I think Lord Acton said it very well when he said, power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. And then he further continued that quote with, and all good men are bad men. Now, does this necessarily mean that all good men are bad men? Not necessarily, but it's a warning for those who think they are too good, that when they grab that power, it's not going to change them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a warning to them that, yeah, it doesn't matter who you are, when you start going to getting that power, it's going to change you. And so you look at the difference in just tactics. You watch the difference in tactics between a police officer with a Glock, mm-hmm, and a police officer with an AR-15 body armor and a full face mask. There's a very real difference in tactics between what they do with when they have bigger weapons and bigger toys.
Well, everyone knows this. I mean, when you're wearing a business suit, you carry yourself differently than when you're wearing jeans and sneakers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't even mean to necessarily. You could go to the same event, and it's just different.
Well, you know, I ran a little experiment of my own a couple of years ago. I never told anybody this, but
it was a secret
reconnaissance.
But did it get government funding?
No,
government funding.
Only if those building WMDs in her garage.
It was a grassroots reconnaissance project.
I smell carbon credits.
But I spent a couple of days just out and about, and every time I encountered our local police officers in their car or wherever, I made a point of thanking them for their service. Thank you for being in our community and helping keep us safe. I just wanted to see what the reaction would be. Only one of them responded back.
Really?
The rest of them turned away, walked away, drove away.
Waving in a weird way. No.
But you know what I'm saying. You get my point. I go out of my way to thank them for being in our community, keeping us safe, and all but one turned away, didn't respond, and didn't care.
Sheriff Logan would have responded.
See, you know, it's interesting. I did a little experiment. I thought that was just interesting. Saturday night after I hung out with you kids at the cattleman's dinner, I was happening to go 80 on the freeway.
Did you spill coffee?
No, I was going 80 on the freeway, and a nice policeman felt the need to pull me over and let me know that.
Really?
But, yeah. But he walks up on the passenger side, you know, and a lot of times, you know, they're on you. You know what I mean? Where are you coming from? Where have you been? And I'm thinking, like, none of your beeswax, buddy. Give me a ticket and be done with it, right? No, this guy shined a light in the back. He sees the little dogs in the back, you know. He's like, hey, how are you guys doing? He was really nice and didn't even give me a ticket. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I even like the police in Siskiyou County.
Yeah.
They actually, it's a whole different thing, you know, a whole different idea.
Just slow down.
We're out of time, eh? Okay, we're out of time. So we've got 5 minutes of news for the folks at home. For those of us here, we get to time travel and come right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Dan Johnson and Debbie Bocciacalupi. We're talking about stuff, you know, don't miss the second hour. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
Yeah.
You're out enjoying family and hopefully good weather. We are pre-recorded. It's 3 weeks ahead of time, so I really don't know what the weather is. If it's pouring rain,
we don't even know if the turkey was good. We're just assuming.
Yeah.
We're planning on it.
Yeah, we fast-forwarded. We're time-traveling ahead 3 weeks. This is We the People Radio with your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. And we're all things fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. And you can go to wethepeopleradio.us to find out about our guests, Debbie Bacigalupi and Dan Johnson. Not going to waste precious airtime with bios. You can read that for yourself. And I'm going to, like, fast-forward right back to Dan, because this has, like, been the most awesome show.
Okay, the most awesome part was the part you all missed during the break.
We want to know what Dan did before he went on the lecture circuit.
And Debbie says he's a hip-hopper. Dan's like, Elizabeth says, let's talk about young people, how they see the world. And Debbie goes, Dan is a hip-hopper. And Dan said, break Dan into hip-hop.
I just look over as, like, hip-hop, not a thing.
He's
like,
shaking his head at me like I'm...
Hip-hop is not a verb. But
I want to know if he did it in his suit. He's wearing a very nice suit.
Dan always wears a suit.
Did he break dance in a suit?
He was wearing plaid at the cattleman's dinner. Did you borrow that?
Yes, from my dad.
Oh, my God,
seriously?
I was totally kidding.
Oh, my God. Know your audience.
He had to rent some plaid for his country, visit to the country.
Man.
Okay, that's funny.
That's hilarious. Okay, so Dan's 20 years old.
And he's a hip-hopper.
And he's the founder of Panda.
And for all the young people out there, they're like, these must be old people. They called him a hip-hopper.
Oh,
poor
God.
Dan.
it's like in a sentence using, yeah, this is hip with your generation, right? Like, no, we don't use hip anymore. Guys, no, not at all. Yeah.
Although Groovy did sort of come back briefly.
I like Groovy. I've always liked Groovy.
And tie-dye has made a real resurgence.
So just so everyone knows, you break to hip-hop music.
Okay.
You don't hip-hop.
Okay.
It just doesn't happen.
I learned my lesson.
Unless you're a frog.
You can now hang with the younger people. Do you still hang?
We do still hang.
Okay.
And chill and all that fun stuff.
That's cool.
Oh, my gosh. That was super
that
funny.
That was fun.
So when I asked him the other day, what were you doing before, you know, Panda, People Against NDAA, and Dan said, well, I used to love to break. I thought he said hip-hop, but...
Debbie logged that in her memory bank.
But anyway, hip-hop. I thought that was pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. So here, Dan does not... This is his 24/7 job.
Mm-hmm.
This is all he does. He's been staying with us at the ranch. He's up till 3 a.m. He doesn't mm-hmm. get paid to do this.
Yeah.
He travels.
The greatest movements are grassroots.
Totally. And, you know, Christmas is coming. I mean, it's amazing what people do for freedom. And
I wanted to throw out pandaunite.org.
Yeah,
that is the website. And you have chapters in how many states?
We have about 30 state teams. One of the things we've done recently is I had designed Panda from the beginning as a centralized organization. I didn't want to, but I didn't see any way around it. I didn't see, like, how are we going to be decentralized and have any structure? Because I saw the Occupy movement, and it flared up very, very fast, and there was a lot of people in the streets
and
protesting.
And it burned out just as quickly.
And it burned out just as quickly.
Yeah, that's because they quit paying them.
And it burned out just as quickly. But when I looked at the Tea Party, okay, you got much more structure. It didn't do anywhere near as much. It didn't garner anywhere near as much attention as Occupy did. But it stayed around a little longer.
But we're still here.
And we don't have the media on our side. Like,
right.
And Occupy didn't either, but we could get into that in the future.
If you start using the public sidewalk as a bathroom, mm-hmm. you're going to get more media.
Yeah.
You know,
no
you're going to get
and,
more
and, you
media.
Know, and you know what's interesting about the Occupy movement is when I was just getting Panda off the ground, when I was just figuring out I wanted to fight NDAA, I was doing a short documentary on the Occupy movement, what was wrong with it. And I had specific letters written out and things like that and footage and things. And then I realized, you know, I've been harping about the mainstream media all the time. And I never actually got a good look at who these guys are. And so I decided to watch, I did two things. Number one, I watched a live stream of Occupy Oakland out here in California.
Ooh.
And instead of getting media filters, instead of getting, you know, the videos where they go up to the communist table and, oh, look, they're selling communist manifestos, I actually watched a live stream of, you know, some of the things they were saying and of the march itself. And I was amazed that you have video of them going up, and they're marching down the street, and the police line is coming their way. It's called kettling. So they have four police lines from either side, and they try to get the protesters in a square. They say, disperse, 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 but everywhere you look, there's police. And so they get the protesters kettled, and they start moving in. They're riot police. They start moving in. And some of the protesters, one of them trips, and the police throw tear gas at him when he's on the ground. And they start shooting rubber bullets at him. And you have...
And all he did was trip?
I'll never forget the scene of occupiers coming with trash can lids and running from their position to cover this guy as they're shooting rubber bullets at him. You can see him getting hit with rubber bullets left and right. And they're dragging this guy away like they're in a war zone.
Jeez.
And you have another clip I remember is you have a group of bike cops. And they're not going in and they're not riding along. They're running literally into the march. So they're taking these 10-speed bikes and they're running over protesters with them. And if you watch the live stream, I saw, yeah, I know there were little problems with Occupy. They slept in tents versus, you know, the standard way the Tea Party protests and things
and
like that.
And broke and destroyed private property.
And some of them had a different idea of destroying private property, much like the Sons of Liberty did back in the American Revolution. The Sons of Liberty said it was okay to destroy private property. The true Sons of Liberty did not. So there was kind of this type of thing in Occupy here. And the massive amount of just policed instigation for all of the things that they did was huge when I watched this live stream. And what I see, you're familiar with the Million Vet March on D.C.,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had always been told by Tea Party people who'd never been to an Occupy meeting, who'd never seen these guys, never met these guys in person, who just kind of watched from the outside, oh, well, they're just dirty hippies, and all they want is free stuff, and when they protest, the police come out in force and knock them over, and when we protest, police are just kind of standing there, everything's okay, we pick up all our trash, we leave. And what you saw at the Million Vet March was what Occupy experienced, because at the Million Vet March, the Tea Party didn't get a permit. And you watch the police move in. And you watch the police try to... I mean, you can see them beating up veterans. And watch video of that. They're beating veterans up. And that is exactly what happened. Although we're younger people, and younger people tend to be a little more fiery.
Yeah.
We're going to be a little bit more violent, sure, as it were, when we're faced with that type of oppression. But Occupy didn't get a permit. They applied several times. Many Occupies did. And it's kind of hard to speak for the whole movement. But a good amount of them did not get a permit. And so what you saw in Oakland, you saw a minor version of at the Million Vet March on D.C., mm-hmm, regardless of who's marching and what ideology they have, is about getting a permit, and the police brutality I saw in Occupy, and then that's one of the reasons, looking at all of this, I don't mean to go on a diatribe here, but in Bowling Green, Ohio, we had our own Occupy. There was 20 people in it. And at the point the police made the raid, there were 8 people in a tent. So it's one tent, 8 people, and a grill.
Wow.
Sitting in the middle of our town square. The Bowling Green Police Department, Bowling Green, Ohio Police Department, ordered riot training for all their officers. They bought a brand new vehicle. They bought riot gear for all their officers. And at 2 a.m., they burst in like heroes, taking out an 8-man tent. And they don't open the zipper or knock on the tent. I've been a Boy Scout. I've been tent camping. You shake the tent and people wake up.
Yeah, right.
No. They take box cutters and slice the tent apart and drag people out of there and arrest them and put them in the back of their vehicle. This is the type of response they had to protest.
So our constitutional right to assemble
is being ripped apart. And what they're doing is they're painting Occupy, especially, and I'm going to blame Fox News for this, especially Fox News, is blaming Occupy for all of this. And what they're doing, and the conservatives don't realize it, is they're stripping your right to assemble away by the laws they're putting in place to go after Occupy, and they're telling you it's okay because it's Occupy. For mm-hmm. example, House Resolution 347, or the Federal Restricted Buildings and Grounds Act of 2012. Essentially what it says is it's something they passed to modify the rules a little bit for protesting. If you disrupt government functions, and even if you don't know Secret Service is there, but you disrupt government functions in your Secret Service,
yeah,
you can be arrested with a misdemeanor. If they find a deadly weapon on you, which a Maryland school decided was a spoon, if they find a deadly weapon on you, you can be arrested for a felony. So this is the type of thing, and I think that if the Tea Party were to reach out to Occupy And we've actually done this. Mm-hmm. We've done Tea Party mm-hmm. Occupy marches in Indianapolis. We've done Tea Party Occupy rallies all over across the country. Mm-hmm. If the Tea Party were to reach out to Occupy and lend their structure and lend their ideas to Occupy, mm-hmm. you would reach out to a huge swath of young people that we agree with. Yeah. That you guys agree with all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is some NDAA has been a very key issue that I can bring Occupy with the Tea Party together.
And, you know, in defense of the Tea Party movement, there has been a huge move forward in finding common ground with what we used to consider adversaries, one of which, a big one, is the ACLU.
I was just thinking that.
The ACLU is big. I mean, they have actually quoted the Tea Party as being their allies on a number of occasions. So that is coming, and that's where you come in. You have the ability to teach us how to communicate with the young people, and I still want to touch on that before we go, or after we come back from our break. You've got three high schools that you're talking to in the next 24 hours, and I would love to know what your message is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, we will have to spell that out for the people that are out there doing hip-hop, right?
No, they're breaking. What are they breaking?
Debbie, you're marked for life. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM.
It's all about who you run with.
Debbie. Welcome to the We the People Radio Studios, where the hosts and guests are doing the TSA wave. Okay, who knew there was a song about rubber bullets? You're killing me. Who was that? Was that 10cc?
That was 10cc of I'm Not in Love fame.
That's oh great. My God. You were thinking about rubber bullets back then? What year?
1977, I believe.
Dang.
Yeah.
We didn't have rubber bullets in, did we?
Apparently somebody did.
Were they joking about was it get smart with the shoe phone and then we all got one?
That was a quickly forgotten follow-up to the things we do for love.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Rubber bullets, man. That freaks me out.
So, Dan, you travel a lot.
It's bizarre.
Because we talked about the fact that you've got teams in 30 states, and so you spend all your time on the road.
A good amount of it, at least.
Okay. So I think your time here is kind of a typical example of what you're doing. So within the next 24 hours, 3 weeks ago, because this show is pre-recorded, you're going to be talking to high school students. Let's talk about young people, what their awareness is, what your message to them is, and how many of them are on board.
Yeah, so with young people, we have a really interesting conundrum here. They're not experienced. They're not experienced in politics. My generation usually doesn't care. However, they're much more open-minded. And so one of the reasons people talk about my generation's apathy is pretty legendary. People talk and make fun about it all the time. But I think one of the reasons we're apathetic is we don't see any worth our effort. It's not worth our effort to change because they're not going to listen. So D.C. kind of lives in such a bubble, and the only thing that young people know about is D.C. Like, they really don't even know there is a local government or really don't care.
City council, all that
stuff. City council, what's a city council? City council, all they're taught about in school is the federal government, is the legislative branches and the executive judicial branch. And so they look at this, and it's this D.C., it's this land far, far away, and it doesn't mean anything to them. It's just like, well, we're not going to have any effect on them. It's just a bunch of corrupt politicians, so why should we care? And I think one of the things that really brings young people in is when they realize they actually can have an effect. Mm-hmm. Like, whether people agree or disagree with him, He didn't necessarily wake me up, but I did start following him shortly afterward, Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
The Ron Paul revolution was commented on several times by CNN and Fox. And like, well, you know what? I mean, his followers are loyal, and they're radically loyal. And he's the oldest guy running.
Yeah.
And but all the young people
followers.
Are following
yeah.
him.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Exactly. And I think what
he did...
And
why is that?
And there's several reasons. One of the reasons was he showed us we actually could make a difference. Showed my generation we actually could make a difference. Showed my generation that if we cared enough, we could do things. So you see these Ron Paul banners. You see the Ron Paul blimp that flew across the sky. I mean, that kind of stuff gets us excited. But, oh, wow, we can actually have an impact. And then,
can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Even though Ron Paul did not stay in the race, has his influence remained? Are these young people that followed him, are they still active?
You won't see very many Mitt Romney 2012 bumper stickers anymore.
Yeah.
You'll see a couple Obama 2012 bumper stickers because
so you
most
just,
people are too embarrassed
they just
now.
Can't stop themselves.
they were the mole people James Madison is talking about from the middle of the earth. But I mean, come on.
You heard it here first.
Even quote unquote liberals or real classical liberals are just like, look, he's so far right and the right's like, well, he's so far left. Like nobody likes him who is actually paying any attention to the president. So. But what you will see is you'll see a lot of Ron Paul 2012.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a lot of Ron Paul 2008.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a lot of... Because one of the things he did was... I mean, even Stephen Colbert, who I don't particularly care for on most things...
Although he is smart. You've got to hand it to him. The guy is a wordsmith.
He's very... And just like Jon Stewart. But
yeah.
Stephen...
No, Smith isn't as good of a wordsmith. Colbert actually... Even though he's a lefty, you gotta hand it to the guy. He's
I mean, I like
talented.
Stewart better, but you know, whatever. If you look at, there was a segment on MSNBC. I think it was Morning Joe or something like that, where they had Colbert and a couple of the people on. And they asked Colbert, "Well, who would you vote for?" He's like, "Ron Paul." They look at him like, "They look at him like, what? What do you mean?" He's like, "We may disagree. We disagree on a lot of things, but at least he's consistent." At least I know when he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. And if I, you know, I trusted the president in this last election, that obviously
it's a really
didn't
good
work
point.
Out. And,
I would
and
not
so,
see him for a for a Ron Paul guy.
You
really?
So
well, he's principled.
He's principled, exactly. And that's why at UCLA, you had, when Ron Paul came to UCLA, they said, oh, he'll never attract a crowd.
Yeah.
So many people, there were people hanging in trees outside the stadium. It was packed.
Oh, we saw pictures.
Sold out.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the crowd, and what did Mitt Romney draw? He went to Detroit. They rented out the Lions Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had to shorten it to renting out a quarter of the field.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't even fill a quarter of the field with supporters. And so you look at all of this, and... He also reached out to us in the medium that we communicate. We talked about this last time I was on the show.
Yeah.
And my generation is audio and video.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you communicate with us.
Right.
We don't read articles. We don't read books. My generation is audio and video for the most part.
Sure.
And so when Ron Paul puts out a commercial that's a video of this giant fist smashing the Department of Education and smashing the Department of Homeland Security and
that's something you could relate to.
That's something we can relate to. And I think that his consistency combined with showing us we actually could make a difference, combined with
so
his
how did he show you that you could make a difference? What did he do that made you believe you could do that?
So while I didn't necessarily participate in the Ron Paul campaign, a lot of my generation did, and what we saw was okay. Well, if we take over this caucus, well, if we take over this Republican Party meeting, well, if we take over this, we take over that, we take over this, we take over that. And you can see the little victories. Everything was broadcast on video. So, like, when the Nevada convention was going on, that was broadcast on video with all the Ron Paul supporters taking over that convention. When the Alaska convention was going on, we took over that. That was broadcast on video. When the Louisiana convention, they sent a SWAT team in and dragged away a guy in a wheelchair along the ground as they're dragging him out of the convention to try to stop him from voting. We saw that on video. And
that's
so
good.
That was what really got us engaged. All right, little pieces. We can take over the caucus and eventually the state and eventually get him elected.
Okay, so another question. Who, in your opinion, is in the running to fill Ron Paul's shoes, and if there is anyone, and then with that particular individual, will your generation get behind them?
No one.
Okay.
There are people who I think have a chance or are kind of close to it. Mm-hmm. Representative Justin Amash is fairly close to it. But, you know, I'm a little more objective than a lot of my generation is. I don't mm-hmm. follow Ron Paul as, oh, the hero.
You don't have Ron Paul to follow anymore, will your generation fall off?
If somebody doesn't come in, because right now the Liberty Movement's fractured. What happened when Rand Paul endorsed Mitt Romney was it split the Ron Paul campaign, the Ron Paul movement down the middle. There were people who put up YouTube videos of them burning Ron Paul signs because of what happened there. And that split us. And when you're dealing with crowds, I'm sure you're familiar with Gustave Le Bon's book, The Crowd. When you're dealing with crowds, you're dealing with crowd psychology, crowds need a hero. Why is the anti-NSA movement so strong? Edward Snowden. Why is the Obamacare movement so strong? Anti-Obamacare movement so strong? Ted Cruz. Crowds need a hero
sure.
to follow.
They need a leader.
They need a leader. And so they need someone to step in that place. I don't know who that's going to be. Eventually, as much as I hate to say it, somebody's going to need to come along. Mm-hmm. And eventually there's going to need to be somebody. But, I mean, it's starting to grow. I mean, they're starting to... You'll see influence of the Ron Paul campaign in state legislatures. You see influence of that in Congress. You'll see influences of that for a man who was touted as a failure by mainstream media. And they're like, look, every bill he introduced in Congress... never made it out. The only bill he ever introduced in Congress that made it out of the House was the Audit the Fed bill, and that was when he was retiring because they felt sorry for him. That was the only bill that ever made it out. But you know what? He was consistent. He was known as Dr. No in Congress. Mm-hmm. And so while all those other congressmen who's gotten bills passed throughout the years that my generation's been around, while all those other congressmen have moved on, retired, nobody cares, and nobody knows who they are besides their constituents or the people they worked with, Ron Paul is a household name. Because he was consistent. He stuck to his principles, regardless of what the politics was. He stuck to his guns. And he's wavered since then, and I'm really not happy about that. But what he did in the past was he stuck to his guns. When we saw that consistency, we saw someone we could trust.
Well, you were looking for stability. Exactly. And one message that you could count on.
Exactly, exactly. And we got tricked by
so many
others.
I don't think it hurt at all that he didn't come from, you know, the big machine, that he was kind of like mm-hmm. the underdog character. I mean, that helps a lot.
Yeah. Exactly, very much so. And we had seen, I mean, a lot of my generation.
So your generation is not establishment.
We're not establishment at all, no. I mean, you look at the number of my generation joined the Libertarian Party, just as a rough number, joined the Libertarian Party versus the Republican Party. Republican Party, I've written an article about this, they're dead. They do not have a chance at my generation. My generation will not take up the flag of the Republican Party.
And speaking of your articles, we can find a lot on Huffington Post. Is that not correct?
I've written for Huffington Post before. You can find a lot more of them on Policy Mike. I've written for mm-hmm. them before. I've written for a few different newspapers. Yeah.
All of which are on WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Yep, absolutely.
So we've got one
like
a minute.
What about the high school? What about the high school?
What's the message?
You're going to be speaking today and then tomorrow in Yreka, too. You're going to be teaching a government class in Yreka.
Mm-hmm. My message is this affects you. My message is there was a teen in Texas who was arrested for and spent 5 months in prison for a Facebook post, for a sarcastic Facebook post. My message is there was a teen in Boston who had the same thing happen to him. My message is this affects you. They're going after you because they need to get you to support this government. They need to get you to live in fear.
I was going to say to be cowed.
To be cowed. Mm-hmm. Or they don't win.
Before anybody else gets to you.
Exactly. They need to get you now when you're developing, when you're young, when you're growing. They need to get you now. And that's my message is going to be to them is you need to fight back.
But they're going to be scared. So if I were a high school student and hearing that message, which I think is accurate mm-hmm. and right on, I'd be so scared.
But they'll be scared, but they'll be awake.
Well... because we have the new Common Core, batch coming out that can mm-hmm. only do groupthink, and the individual doesn't count. So, you know, you guys are standing in the gap at this point. We're going to come right back with more from Dan Johnson. We're talking about the People Against the National Defense Authorization Act and some other good stuff here. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM.
The streets I used to own. I used to roll the dice, feel the fear.
like to be the president. So I can show you how your money's spent.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
That would be the Democrats soliciting the Republicans in the House.
That's my mom. Why can't we all just get along?
Yeah. Don't you love those coexist bumper stickers? Are you kidding me? Anyway, welcome back to We the People Radio. Go to We the People Radio. I know. Go to WeThePeopleRadio.us. We are talking to Dan Johnson, PandaUnite.org. On that webpage, you will find a bio, links, and videos of Dan speaking to groups. Contact him. He's awesome. He's fantastic. He travels. He's one of the country's fastest impromptu speakers, and we're with him now. And we just decided that you've got something on soft legislation and
warm and fuzzy legislation, as we like to call it, because that's all it does. It gives you warms and fuzzies inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this trend that's becoming prevalent in the activist community that is, well, we're going to work with our state legislators, and, oh, my state rep tells me that, well, we need to tone this bill down, or it's never going to get passed. So there's this trend that kind of appears in this, and the liberty movement or the activist community is starting to follow this trend. Oh, we're going to listen to our state legislators. Well, it isn't strong enough, but it's a, oh, my favorite quote, step in the right direction. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you have is you have two different schools of thought or ideas about activism. And one is the Jeffersonian and Madisonian idea, which is we're going to introduce strong resolutions in 1789. They introduced the Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions. We're going to introduce these strong resolutions. They failed at first. The people got so angry that the resolutions failed that they just went up in arms, and that was it. The resolutions went through it the next time. And then we have the example in Michigan. They tried to pass legislation against the Real ID Act. So they meet with the state representatives, and you're familiar with the Real ID Act, the national ID card. So they meet with their state representatives, and they're like, well, and the state reps are like, ah, we know, we understand you, we understand your feelings, your thoughts about this, but a act will never pass. So we're going to put a resolution forward saying we're against it as a step in the right direction. And then we're going to come back and we're going to pass real legislation next year. In 2007, I believe, they passed the resolution through the House. Pretty easily, flew right through, and was signed by the governor. To this day, Real ID is still allowed in Michigan. The step in the right direction never came. Because what the state reps did was went around the state going, I did it, I saved you, this is the end, we stopped it, ah, da, da, da. And the people believed him and sat back down. And so you have these two schools of thought, which is, number one, we'll listen to our politicians and they'll get it done next year, or number two, we'll introduce something we know won't pass, but we'll educate them right the first time, and we'll get the people rally behind that bill or behind that piece of legislation the first time, and when it fails, we'll introduce it again, and when it fails, we'll introduce it again, and eventually it'll get through because the anger of the people will be behind it, instead of, we're going to soft-toe this all the way through, and that's what I talk about. Warm and fuzzy legislation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, unless you're in California, where, I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. You could write, you know, you can write as many, unless you're banning lead ammunition or you're trying to do something about greenhouse gas, it ain't going.
Well, that's what's
just the flat fact of it.
Well, that's what's peculiar about Assembly Bill 351. It was signed into law by the governor very recently. And Assembly Bill 351 has been hailed by the anti-NDAA community, not us. We never supported it. But it was hailed by them as, this is going to save our rights. This is going to stop the NDAA in California. It's going to block military detention, block military law, all this stuff. Wonderful things said about this bill. Even the Washington Times picked it up. And that doesn't happen for an anti-NDAA piece of legislation. They don't like to touch that subject. But even they picked it up and talked about it. This is the Sacramento Bee, I believe, mm-hmm. around here, mm-hmm. they picked it up. So several newspapers and things picked it up. We tried to work with a sponsor who is Representative Tim Donnelly.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to modify two things in the bill to make it stronger. We didn't get it to where it needed to be. And then they cut off contact. They refused to contact us.
They being?
The Tim Donnelly's office cut off contact with us. And there was another organization, the 10th Amendment Center, that was fairly involved with it. And I'm pretty sure they were guiding it because it was their sample legislation that the representative was using. And we hadn't been in contact with them. Still haven't. Tried to reconnect after the bill passed. Having no luck. But this bill, hailed as the be-all, end-all, in fact, even Russian media picked up this bill. Russia Today picked up this bill as the be-all, end-all against the NDAA. And the bill has more holes in it than a Swiss cheese sandwich run through an electric drill. And that's the easiest way to put it. I mean, it has citizen, or well, we changed that to person, so we were able to get that, and we were able to get any federal law instead of NDAA. But first of all, in several Supreme Court cases, it has been very clearly established if the federal government tells the state to do something, it does not have to enforce that law. So if the federal government passes a law and says the state will enforce this law, the state does not have to do it. New York v. United States, the federal government tried to tell New York you're going to bury radioactive waste in your state. They said, no, we're not. Supreme Court upheld it. Prince v. U.S., Sheriff Mack and Sheriff Prince went up to the Supreme Court and said, you know, isn't the sheriff the highest law enforcement official in the land? Supreme Court, once again, in that reaffirmed that the state and state officials, including the sheriff, do not have to enforce federal law. And so, first of all, this bill is a series of what I call non-compliance or coward bills. Actually, the best way to put it is, it's a Pontius Pilate bill. Wiping the blood off our hands, can't sue the state, we're not going to participate in your indefinite military detention, but, you know, the feds can. I mean, we're going to sit here and drink our tequilas and lay back on our yard chairs, and the feds can do it. And so the premise of the bill is not anything new. The state doesn't have to enforce it anyway. And then the bill goes on, and it allows the state to fund the indefinite detention, if necessary, if they want to. It allows the state to, I mean, it has a clause in there that if we form a agency or a task force and it's not formed for the purpose of detaining someone, like, so let's say you have a drug task force, it's not formed to detain someone under NDAA, so therefore it's exempt from this law, and they can totally help out the feds.
Here's what I hear you saying. Under the California...
Thank you, psychologist.
It's for people like me who need Common Core, I guess, to stay up with the rest of everyone else. So I hear that here we have California has an anti-NDAA bill that does nothing to protect us against federal authorities or whatever coming in and detaining us as terrorists on U.S. soil.
Absolutely. It does absolutely nothing. And what they did with this bill, which is now law, they got everyone in California, or the big people in California, against the NDAA to sit back down. You have
so
any
we think
idea?
We're protected and we're not.
Yeah, you have any idea? It's hard enough to get someone off the couch the first time, especially if they've never been involved with activism. Have any idea how hard it is to get them off the couch the second time?
Yeah, especially when they don't think there's a reason.
So exactly. What do we do? So how do we turn this thing around?
Did the state have the ability? I mean, did they have the ability to roll it back anyway?
As far as,
I mean, is there legislation in some state out there that has shielded their people from the federal law?
It's been introduced. We had it in three states, Alaska, mm-hmm. Colorado, and Maryland. In Colorado, Representative Jared Wright had introduced the Warm Fuzzy Act, and we had contacted him and said, hey, Liberty Preservation Act does nothing, won't protect the people. And he had the integrity, after the bill was introduced, to switch the entire language. And did that. It died on the Colorado House floor by one vote. In Alaska, that was when we learned our lesson not to play softball with these guys. They turned it into, it went from the Restoring Constitutional Governance Act, which specifically targets the laws of war, and says the state will interpose to protect the rights of the people, so put itself between a rogue federal government and the rights of the people. And it went down to one sentence in another bill that essentially said, state officials will not assist in violating due process, which means absolutely nothing to law enforcement. They're like, what? Fifth Amendment already covers that? No extra at all. Nothing helps. So today in the United States, the only three cities, not states, but the only three cities that I can say clearly legislatively have blocked NDAA. And one of those cities has already gone down to the final step, which is a citizen response team formed. In Albany, New York, they have legislatively blocked NDAA. In Webster, Massachusetts, they have legislatively blocked the application of laws of war under NDAA. And in Oxford, Massachusetts, they've not only blocked the action, they've talked to local law enforcement about it, and we're getting them right now to sign a policy document saying we won't do this. And then they put a citizens' response team in the area, set up to watch officials. It's kind of like a see something, say something, except it's not on your neighbor, it's on your government.
So then, in a nutshell, it keeps coming down to the local level.
It does keep coming down to the local level because, I mean, your state legislator, all this stuff, all this talk about states' rights, it's great. It's wonderful. It's in theory. But if you go to the state legislatures right now, how many people have been arrested in the New York State Legislature alone for corruption?
None.
I mean,
any?
There's a couple.
Here, we just lost somebody, last week?
And those are the ones who get caught. If you look at the New York State Legislature, most of them have actually been convicted of a crime in the past.
But then they get their job back, right?
But of course they get their job back. And this is why real legislation that protects the rights of the people and does the number one job set out in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, for these reasons governments are instituted among men. The number one job of government is to protect our rights. And they've forgotten that number one job. It's up to the feds. Oh, it's up to the state. Oh, it's up to this. Oh, it's up to that. You take an oath of the Constitution, good sir? Yes, you do. If you take an oath of the Constitution, you take an oath not to a document, you take an oath to protect my rights that are enshrined in that document. And that's why we've gone to the local level, because that's the only way we've been able to gain any traction in this. And it does have some history. In the past, during the Civil War, fugitive slave acts were passed by local governments and said, look, we're not going to return slaves to their owners. We think it's unjust, and we're not going to allow it to happen. But it's been that long since local governments have actually stood up for the rights of their people.
Now, I have a question, and I've wondered this before. When we talk about the NSA and their new facility in the state of Utah, did the state legislature there work with the federal government to build that facility? But it is on a military base. So did the feds have jurisdiction, and it was basically, we're building it whether you like it or not?
I bet that at least the state legislature was notified. And obviously, they didn't do anything about it. Yeah. Because, I mean, you look at the NSA facility, that's an easy fix. Turn the water off.
Yeah.
You refuse to provide them water from the state, all of a sudden that facility is a hunk of molten metal.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Cut the water off. And often it's just easy actions like that. But the state has to actually stand up for the people's rights. It can't say, well, we won't assist. This idea of noncompliance might work well for, like, an Obamacare situation where there's no such thing as a federal hospital, or really, very rarely, I don't know of a federal hospital.
Yeah, but look what happens in the reverse with, like, the marijuana laws in California.
Yeah.
You know, California has made a law that's contrary to federal law, so now you
and
have
it, and
all
it should,
this nightmare.
If the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, like it says it is, and if we believe the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, only laws adherent to the Constitution are law. And nowhere in the Constitution, you talk about prohibition, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, we had to pass a constitutional amendment to allow alcohol prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
We should have to pass a constitutional amendment to allow marijuana or any other drug prohibition as well. The Constitution says the schedule marijuana laws are unconstitutional. Therefore, they are not law, and therefore the state law that allows it, that is the supreme law of the land because it adheres to the Constitution. And so that's where we have to look, is the Constitution, mm-hmm. supreme law of the land. And you know what? The states created the federal government.
Yeah, you know,
not
we
the other
can't all cherry pick when the Constitution fits.
No.
Exactly.
So I'm curious, Dan, what can listeners do?
We're going to do that right after the break.
Oh, perfect.
I think. Oh, yeah, Bob's pushing the button. A little Footloose music there for us as we head out here. We're going to come back with one more segment. We've got Dan Johnson here, and I hope you guys all had a great Thanksgiving. We're pre-recording with you, so we're actually not taking calls. Catch us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
We're wrapping up yet another great segment of We the People Radio with our guests Debbie Bacigalupi and Dan Johnson. It's been fantastic. Second time with Dan on our show. Go back into the archives into August, and you'll find another show. And actually, part of what we did in that segment is we started off our time with Dan with a clip from a presentation that he did. I think Bowling Green University, if I'm not mistaken.
They would never let me give a presentation.
Okay, so it was.
They wouldn't?
But it was fantastic.
Aren't you a poli sci major there?
Yeah, well, I was at one point. I dropped out to continue doing this.
Well, I'll scribble that off my list of things to say.
To save we Americans.
Well, you know, it's a choice between getting good grades and not having Homeland Security knock down your door.
Yeah. So
there's a choice.
So not well received, eh?
Not well received. No, my mayor told me I was an idiot. Go back to basic government class.
Wow.
My city councilman told me to do something I could actually have an effect on and not this.
Wow.
Some of my teachers were rather disapproving.
And all that does is make you want to do
Is it a liberal school, or is it just kind of par for the course?
It is kind of the bastion of communism in the Midwest. And the reason
I
say that...
It's a liberal school.
Is there any other kind?
Apparently not.
And the reason I say that is because our dean of political science is actually a registered and avowed communist.
That's awesome.
So
it's an Earth Charter school.
Nice.
Actually, when we took our when I took my makeup test because I slept through one of them, there was a UN flag in the background. So, wow. Yay.
There you go. Need we say more?
No, that pretty much take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Wow.
Those kids
really?
Those people don't stand a chance.
So I'd almost refer to it not as dropping out, but leaping off the ship.
Yeah,
there you go. Really.
Kind of like
save
that
yourself.
Little cartoon with the state of Jefferson and the
Titanic
big Titanic of California.
Yeah. Hey, well, on the home front, are the folks like, way to go, Dan? Or is it like, Dan, what are you doing?
Come on, buddy.
My parents have always been very supportive. They've been, you know, what you want to do.
I mean, we can blame them at this point, right? Debbie is our resident psychiatrist here. She can blame it on her parents.
Blaming your parents is in.
That's right.
Look what homeschooling does.
Yeah.
Exactly. Is this amazing or what?
But so once they got the product they made, are they happy with it?
Yeah, they're
not
proud.
Sending it back.
They're very proud. We disagree on things, but they're very proud of what I've been doing, and I'm their son, and that kind of overtakes any kind of politics that's in the way or what have you.
So they're like actual grown-ups.
Believe it or not. Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. We're big fans. I mean, you know,
we are.
like to praise grown-ups when we find them out there.
Yeah. That's right.
That doesn't always happen. You know, a lot of times people want you to be independent and all that, and then you go do it, and they're mad.
Then all of a sudden, oh, wait, well, we don't want you to be that independent.
We wanted you to do what we said, though. Yeah.
Independently choose this choice.
Interesting. Now, do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have two brothers. One is going to be 16, and one is 13.
Okay.
So
you're a great example, then. That's fantastic.
As much as I can be.
So what do they think about all this? You guys chat about this at home?
No, well, not really.
Are you home much at all?
Not much at all. Like, I'm home maybe one day every month or something like that.
Wow. There's not much chatting then. There really isn't
that much chatting. But from time to time, I'm home, and we won't really discuss politics. I think it's important for especially younger kids to grow up sheltered a little bit so that they can grow up and be a kid for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that when they're an adult, they don't have to get their kid out at that point.
Yeah.
Then they're able to be a kid. So we don't really talk about, you know, they're killing American citizens abroad. That's not an table discussion.
You guys don't sit around and do reviews on the Hunger Games, for instance.
No. Although if I did a review on the Hunger Games, I would say it's a very, very sick movie. And if you look at the regions that they set out, they're very close to the regions that the Federal Emergency Management Agency has set out.
Yeah. Striking, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, well, this is rather curious.
It's just an accident.
Hey, so Dan, what do you see going forward 6 months to a year?
Hunger Games.
For what you're doing.
Hunger Games,
We'll be on. I know.
I see, the future's up to the people of this country. Depends on what kind of future you want. I can't force you into it. And, there's a clear path that history has said. We're going to look like Nazi Germany. History has said this. I mean, and history tends to be right most of the time.
Sure.
We're going to look like Nazi Germany if we continue down this path. And... if we don't, then we'll start to see more freedom, we'll start to see more liberty, and it's really going to be up to the people to take action. That's really what our campaign that we've launched is all about. We launched the Take Back the Town campaign beta in early October, about October 5th. I was up all night typing out the documents going, oh crap, I have a team leader in Florida who needs these. We have since modified them a little bit and made them a little more copacetic. And this Take Back the Town campaign kind of moves, as I was talking about a little earlier in the program, about centralization. We've gone decentralized. And so what this means is we've got a group of people in Panda that are the top. We've got our law enforcement advisor, 18 years, Columbus PD. Our event coordinator put on rock concerts with Breaking Benjamin as the headliner. You've got some massive names on our team.
Crack team.
But what we're doing is we've put together a packet that contains everything anyone needs to take back their town is in this packet, to take back their town from NDAA. It includes the Restoring Constitutional Governance Resolution, which we've spent thousands of hours on. It includes Legislative Defense Manual, which House Armed Services Committee put out a cute little booklet on the NDAA called, it was a Mythbuster style. It was like, this is a myth of that the NDAA
this
allows
for detention.
This is what
they're saying, and this is reality.
Exactly. So that ticked me off so much, it inspired me to do a Mythbuster style of our own, using actual facts instead of what they do in the House Armed Services report, which they'll actually quote a portion of NDAA and put dot, dot, dot. And what's in the dot, dot, dot is what you need to know.
But they didn't list
that part.
Nice.
And so everything they say makes sense. But nonetheless, we put out our own Mythbuster report, and that's included. We actually have North Carolina Senator Burr responded to who we call our legislative council, and they responded back. So we've got a dialogue between a U.S. senator and between our legislative council. And we've got tools and groups and coalitions ready to go.
So tell me very quickly who your partners are in Panda. Because I remember back when we talked the first time, when I was reading your bio and reading about Panda, you've had some pretty significant partnerships created.
Yes, we've partnered with people. It's kind of hard to tell, like, which different organizations,
okay,
kind of name them all. We've partnered with over 200 organizations,
okay,
across the country, and we've partnered with such a spectrum from left to right. And ACLU and Oath Keepers don't agree on anything.
Right.
And they agree on NDAA. They agree,
yeah,
NDAA needs to be repealed, and we need to take action against it. So Oath Keepers has been a great help. Patriot Coalition has,
mm-hmm,
been,
okay,
indispensable to us.
Now, here's something that crosses my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hollywood recently put out a video against the NSA and the NDAA and all the privacy violations and the listening in on conversations and you know, obviously
you
they're
see that look.
Yeah, but when you think about pop culture, how would any of that fit into what you're doing?
First of all, I need to address one point you made about the Hollywood video. That was put out by the Stop Watching Us Coalition. Now, as they,
yeah,
said in Slate recently, the and people who are against the NSA were never worried about congressional inaction. They were worried that Congress would react with a warm, fuzzy piece of legislation and a warm, fuzzy movement. Now, I do not know why the Koch brothers, George Soros, the Rockefellers, and the MacArthur Foundation are into the anti-NSA movement. They directly fund, they're part of the staff, or they partner with most of the members of the Stop Watching Us Coalition that did the protest in,
mm-hmm,
D.C. recently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they're doing this.
Okay.
All I know is what they get involved with usually isn't a good thing. So
right.
First of all, I'll say a video like that, I don't trust it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why,
mm-hmm,
they're doing this, I can't tell you, but I don't trust it. However, audiovisual and pop culture is going to be where this war is won. I'm sorry to say to all the people who are trying to infiltrate the school system, good luck.
Yeah.
It is so regimented, it is so put together, you're not going to have a chance. Pop culture, that's the way.
That's true, and that shifts quickly.
Yeah, and before we get off, pandaunite.org/takeback is where you can get that packet that I was talking
about.
Thank
you.
So Panda,
okay,
takeback.
That was the question.
Pandaunite.org/takeback. Debbie, thank you. Dan, Elizabeth, Bob,
John Boy, Mary Ellen.
We're looking forward to Thanksgiving that will be in the rearview mirror when this show airs. What's that? Gobble, gobble? You can't mouth it. We're on radio. You got to say it out loud. Nice, Bob.
Happy Thanksgiving, folks.
Agent Smith, hope you learned a lot.
Exactly.
Oh,
hi to the NSA. Okay, we'll see you guys all next week.